I love to go to businesses that aren't ours, that are new, that I am going to go walk through hotels. I want to try new restaurants.
Yeah, but that's not all bad.
No, that's not bad. She likes that part. But she knows that I'm going to take time and go do that and see kind of what's happening. And that's exciting for me because there's a lot of great stuff happening.
Welcome to ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This show, like many, features successful entrepreneurs, but unlike the others, all our guests, like you and I, choose Colorado. Success looks different here. It's multidimensional, and that's why I say live, work, love Colorado. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Walter Eisenberg, CEO of Sage Hospitality. Walter is renowned in the hospitality business and in Colorado for his business leadership and philanthropy. Sage Hospitality was formed in 1984 and is recognized as a preferred management company for Marriott, Hilton, and Starwood, and it owns and operates signature hotels you know in Colorado, including the Curtis, the Halcyon, and the Crawford, and of course, many others. Walter and I will be diving deeply into topics including developing new tastes and markets, why he invests millions of dollars in art for Sage properties, driving culture at Sage, service to the community, and staying innovative and fresh. Walter Eisenberg, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here. I've been looking forward to this, and we're going to jump right in after I thank my sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado and MicroStar Keg Logistics. They support Colorado entrepreneurism, and they support this show. Thanks also to the Colorado Chamber of Commerce for its support for me and ProCo 360. So, Walter, let's go, and let's start with sort of you've got over 50 hotels managed by Sage, 24 in Colorado that seem to be sort of in two categories. Some are the sort of carry corporate flags like Marriott, Hampton Inns, and others, and some are known to be sort of extremely unique hotels like the Curtis, the Halcyon, the Maven. So give us a description of Sage and good overview.
Well, we own and operate hotels and restaurants in 20 states. Our biggest presence clearly is in Colorado, about a third of our portfolio.
And hooray for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we did that on purpose.
Yeah.
We do have a broad range of assets, ranging from more branded hotels, as you said, that would be kind of typical what someone might expect to go when they're searching for a Hilton, Hyatt, Marriott type product. We've also created some pretty unique assets, one being the redevelopment of Denver's Union Station, where we have the Crawford Hotel. Another was the redevelopment of a full block in downtown Denver called Dairy Block, where we have the Maven Hotel. And those are more unique experiences in what people today are calling lifestyle hotels.
So why be in both flavors? I mean, they seem like almost entirely different kinds of businesses. One caters to people who want sort of the same thing everywhere, and others are completely opposite. They want different experiences. So why are you in both of those businesses?
Well, our roots really was in the branded products. And so some of those assets that we have are what we would call legacy assets for us. And as you look at our portfolio and how it has shifted over the last 10 years, we were probably 90% weighted to that branded portfolio. And today we're probably in the 25 to 30% range.
Yeah, yeah.
So as consumer trends have changed, we have really shifted our focus, and where our growth is almost 100% in the lifestyle category.
Got it. And by lifestyle category, I'm going to refer to a couple of comments that you've made on your website. I mean, one of the phrases is hotels are becoming, rather than something that you go through, something that you go to, very specifically. And then you say a few things like Sage hotels are destinations in themselves. You want people to have exploration via curated experiences, and then you've got the art program. I mean, it seems like an entire wave change in sort of the way you're approaching the business.
Yeah, and it's a response to what consumers are wanting. Clearly, there are a lot of consumers who say, I want to go to Marriott Courtyard because I know what I'm going to get. I'm going to get the same thing every time. There's a certain level of quality I'm going to get. My expectations will be met. And that will serve the purpose of my visit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what's happening is there are also a huge number of consumers who are saying, I don't just want to go to a hotel and kind of spend the night, but I want to experience the community. I want to get connected in the local scene and see what's going on. The advent of Airbnb, which some in our industry would call a bad word, is, I think, a perfect example of what consumers are seeking out. We believe that we can provide kind of the best of both worlds. We can provide that unique experience, but also the safety and security, if you will, of a traditional hotel environment, which is very different than Airbnb. I don't mean to say it's unsafe. It's just, it's a different level of safety and security.
Well, and when you talk about security, you can talk about the safety piece of it, but you can also talk about predictability.
Correct. And reliability.
And, yeah. And so I suppose, you know, and I've used both and, but I can see where one of the benefits of an Airbnb is the sense of uniqueness, and you get away from the typical. And so I could, what you're doing is creating unique experiences that are predictable and easy.
Right. And I think that the key to that is that, you've got to be, and this word is overused, but it's a good word, authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people know when you're faking it. And so I think one of the things we spend a lot of time doing in these assets is really curating the right experience for the consumer that has local connections to it.
Well, there's an example. You've had a hotel and probably many where you've put over $1 million worth of art. So talk about that. And that must lend itself to this notion of authenticity that you're describing, right? You can't fake it with prints.
No, you can't fake it. And I think we started putting local art into our hotels about 25 years ago. The first place we did it was in the Courtyard by Marriott on 16th and Curtis, which we still operate. It's an adaptive reuse of the historic Joslyn's department store. It was the first urban courtyard in America. It was the first historic adaptive reuse of a courtyard. Now there are a whole bunch of them. But one of the things that we did at the time was we said, you know, we have to, this is unique, right? It's the first of its kind, even though it was a courtyard. And we have to do some unique things. So we went out and decided that we were going to hire a local photographer. We hired Giff Ewing, who's an amazing guy. And he does a lot of black and white photography, primarily landscapes, but also architecture. And we commissioned him to take five photographs of iconic Denver buildings. And we purchased those prints and then ran them, obviously, to put them in the guest rooms. And it was really, for us, an interesting idea. And it was, at the time, unique. A, that black and white photos 25 years ago in hotel rooms was unique. Local kind of photographs was unique. And at the same time, we then also created a partnership with the University of Colorado Denver College of Arts and Media. And we took the pre-function space of our meeting rooms and asked students, alums, and professors of UC Denver from the College of Arts and Media to produce art. And we have now shows, and they rotate out three times a year, still 20-plus years later, still doing the same thing. So that connection to art told us from customer feedback that was really cool. They were like, wow, this is neat. Some students who were displaying their art sold art for the first time in their lives. And so it just created a lot of energy.
So do you think that the art and the investment in art is consciously noticed, or is it creating more of an ambiance that people don't necessarily put their finger on, but they sense that this is special?
We get both, I think. There are some people who, you know, go, hey, this feels kind of cool. You know, the art's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. There are others who get totally engaged and they want to find out about the artist. They may want to buy a piece. And art is not without controversy, by the way.
Yeah, of course. Well, anything current. Yeah.
Right.
So do you think the art itself is creating repeat visits?
I don't know if it in and of itself, it's creating repeat visits. Interestingly enough, today, a lot of our competitors are now doing the same thing, which is great.
Are they doing it for real or are they doing it to copy? And can you tell the difference?
Well, we'd like to think you can tell the difference.
What I would
tell you is we spend an inordinate amount of time thinking about the art and making it relevant for the place. I'll give you a perfect example. Yeah. The Oxford Hotel, the oldest hotel in Denver. I know the Brown Palace doesn't like to hear it, but 1 year older than the Brown. We acquired that hotel in 1990 and still own it today. And it has always had amazing art. In fact, we kind of got inspired by Dana Crawford, who is our partner, and she had purchased Western art oils that, frankly, were very valuable. And that was originally the art in the hotel. That art is still there, but we've taken some of it out of the lobby as we've tried to remain relevant for the new traveler. And we commissioned a piece from Duke Beardsley. Duke is a local artist, Colorado artist, and he does Western art. We've got a piece of his now in the lobby. But the connection for us was his, I think, great-grandfather was one of the founding partners of Davis, Graham & Stubbs Law Firm, which is across the street from the Oxford. And Duke went out and found an old ledger from the Oxford Hotel where his great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather actually signed the ledger, and he incorporated that into the piece.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's this really cool story, and our associates know it and can share that. That, to me, makes an emotional connection for the guest where they may say, you know what? There is something special. I'm coming back.
That's cool. Well, it is a beautiful hotel. And a great place to have a cocktail as well. So these beautiful pieces of art and collections of art and the beautiful aesthetics that you're building into your hotels, is that driven by sort of a cycle of affluence in our nation? And, well, I'll just ask that first.
You know, I don't think so. In fact, the bulk of the art that we're buying are from artists, many of whom have never had their art displayed in such a public environment. One of our goals with our art program is to fuel economic growth in the local community. So you think about, you could buy prints, you know, from a catalog. You could buy prints that are actually pretty good,
and you
could
nail those to the wall too.
You could. But one of our goals is to inspire the local art community. And you know, making money producing art is not an easy thing. And so we believe that by buying art from local artists, some of them who are very new, young into the business of producing art, is also an economic benefit. That's going out into the community. And then, you know, the other thing is those people are, frankly, telling their friends and family, oh my God, you know, you got to go, you got to go see my art at the, you know, at the Maven.
Oh, that's cool.
And so there's that sense of community, I think, is something that's unique, and we're very particular in how we're selecting that art.
Now, I'm going to ask you for a short answer to this, although it's a long one. But I mean, is it just more fun to make hotels like this?
Way more fun. Way more fun.
I would think that, you know, so art, when it really comes down to it, does it really matter whether you're following a trend, creating a trend? I mean, you're executing on something that seems to be joyful for you.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I have a saying that I've used a lot with people: love what you do and love who you do it with. If you're able to do that, it's not work.
Yeah. Now, I got to ask you the obvious and crass question, which is, how do you recover the investment, not just in the art, but in the beautiful fixtures, the gorgeous way you build hotels? Is that just recovered one night at a time, or how does that work?
It is recovered one night at a time. We're in a very difficult business. Somebody said to me, "What's the if you described what's the one big challenge you have in your business?" I said, "Well, the one big challenge we have in business, we have one day leases."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you think about that, you know, the restaurant business is even worse. They say we have a 45-minute lease restaurant business. So that is the excitement for me of our business and also the challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
When you come check into one of our hotels or you come eat in one of our restaurants, we have an opportunity to have you have an amazing experience, or we have an opportunity to have you have a different kind of an experience.
Yes, uh-huh.
And sometimes we do the latter, unfortunately. But what we tell our people is recovery is number one. Mm-hmm. If you can recover from a mistake, we're all humans.
Yep, yep.
Then you have the ability to frankly make that customer a customer for life.
Yep.
If you do a great job with recovery. But we've the excitement of our business is we wake up every single day and have a whole new set of customers. Some of them are repeat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, hopefully a lot of them are repeat.
Yeah.
But we've got that opportunity every single day. And that's the challenge in front of us, but also the excitement.
Well, and that was a great way to segue to the whole next chapter of our conversation, because this chapter I'm calling sort of attitude of culture through employees. And you, in your job descriptions, and I was on your website, every job description talks about wanting your team members to break the mold. What's that mean for you?
Well, we like to give all of our associates the freedom to be themselves with customers, to come up with new ideas about how we can be better at our business. And I think that's where that comes from. I would say that's where that comes from.
I mean, I noticed that wording in management level and in entry level jobs, almost the same wording about breaking the mold and taking initiative and such. How is that though executed differently for maybe a food and beverage manager versus a dishwasher? And I noticed that you use the same phrasing in both those job descriptions.
Well, I think we're trying to bring the right people into our business, and that's, we want people who think entrepreneurial. We want people that are risk takers. And frankly, whether it's we want that dishwasher to be our next restaurant manager.
Do you see that happen?
Oh yeah, we do. And we have a lot of people that start with our company at maybe an entry level job. And the great thing about our industry is that if you're willing to work hard and you're passionate, and you love people, you got to love people, you can do anything in our business.
Yeah. I've seen that in others. Some are more frequently executing on that than others. I want to talk with you more about that. First, I want to remind the listeners, this is ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And this is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm speaking with Walter Eisenberg, CEO of Sage Hospitality, and continuing along the theme of developing associates. I noticed a front desk job description that said you're empowered and encouraged to create memorable, positive guest experiences with every guest every day. And of course, that language you see at almost every company. And some execute on that and some don't, right? I get the sense that you do, but tell me how.
So we spend a tremendous amount of time focused on the culture of the organization, and we have something called the Sage DNA, and it really talks about how we want to operate our business. And in the center of our DNA is our why, our purpose, and our purpose is to enrich people's lives one experience at a time.
Who are the people you're talking about?
We are talking about our associates. We are talking about our customers. We're talking about our investors.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the community.
But when you talk, and we're going to talk about community a little bit too, but when you talk about, I'm reflecting back on something you said a moment ago, freedom to be themselves among your associates. And then you talk about your DNA. I mean, when you think about freedom to be themselves today, people are really, really varied and they're really encouraged to exhibit their individuality in many, many ways, right? So how do you balance that as a hotelier around how much do you want people to be themselves versus how much do you want them to be how you need them to be?
You know, I think in the old school of thinking in our business, you wanted people to get trained on, you know, how to behave, what to say, when to say it, how to say it. And the business has changed dramatically. And we want people to be themselves. We also spend a lot of time working with our people on trying to read the customer, because the real difference, so I am who I am, but every customer that comes in front of me is going to be different. And, you know, some of them may want to be called Mr. and some may want to be called by their first name. Some are going to be more formal than others. And so what we try to work with our associates on is to be able to read that and then act accordingly, right? Not to not be yourself, but be appropriate in that relationship. And I think that's where we're focused, because if you look back historically, Ritz-Carlton, which is an amazing company, they have a saying, they still use it, we are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. Well,
that's kind of doesn't work today, does it?
It doesn't really work, because I don't know about you, but when I'm traveling, I don't want somebody to treat me like, you know, a gentleman.
Yeah.
I want them to be a little more laid back.
I don't like it when they race to open a door for me. Yeah. It embarrasses me. I don't like it.
Yeah. And so part of what we're working with our people, we have a phrase that we call modern luxury at our lifestyle hotels. And, you know, being in Denver, it really helps us, because there's another phrase that I like, which is Western hospitality. You know, kind of approach, it's approachable. It's not stuffy. It's not, you know, it's not too formal.
Yeah.
And frankly, I really don't care where you are today. It's the way of the world. It's what people want today.
Yeah. Yeah. A more, they want to be served in a friendly way. In a friendlier, as opposed, at least my observation, and maybe I'm reading myself, but not in a subservience.
No, and a more natural.
Yeah,
you know, natural. And that, you know, if I go into a restaurant, you know, I want to engage with that associate, and, you know, have a natural relationship with them through that dining experience.
Now, you mentioned earlier too in our talk that it's a tough business to be in, and it's a one day at a time kind of a thing, And I was looking at Glassdoor.com, and generally great reviews about Sage as a place to work. One I thought was really well put, and it said, great company in a rough industry. And this person said, the pros are recommends the company, positive outlook, approves of the CEO. There you go.
Thank you.
Fantastic leadership and a wonderful family to be part of. The cons, horrific hours and workload. Sometimes many, many days without, you know, without a day off. I mean, this is just your world, right?
It is. We're open 24/7, 365. You know, one of our restaurants on Christmas did 600, you know, covers. And, you know, we had people, you know, I'm sure our manager, our chef there, you know, they probably worked 14, 16-hour day that day. It's Christmas.
Yeah.
You know?
And they're not with their families.
They're not with their families.
Yeah.
And it is the nature of our business. So it is, and I think that if that's not the right thing for you, there's other different kinds of benefits.
But you can't really advance in your industry if you're not willing to gut that. In fact, even when you make it, when you're at the pinnacle of your career, you're working on Christmas and you're working 20-hour days that day, right?
Yeah, it's just the nature, kind of the nature of the beast. And you've got to love it. And it's not for everybody, you know, but it's, if you're in our business and you're in operations, and you don't want to work weekends and nights, you're in the wrong business.
Do people figure out how to create lives for themselves that are just as fulfilling and just as wholesome as somebody who works 9 to 5, Monday through Friday? Do they figure out how to adjust their lives to encompass this?
Absolutely. And for our senior leaders, salaried senior leaders, we have a program called the Independence Plan. And so we're not tracking your days off. Mm-hmm. You theoretically have unlimited, vacation time. Yeah. And what we tell our leaders is, look, we know you're working hard and you don't need to go, like, you got to make sure things are covered. But if you want Monday off because your kids play that day, or there's a basketball game with your kids or whatever it is, you can do it. You don't need to ask permission.
We
want you to do that. So figuring out how to create that balance in people's lives and making sure that they are doing a good job themselves of work-life balance, which is important. We're trying to give them the tools to do that within the system, knowing that they're making a lot of other sacrifices.
Sure. Well, I suppose also your leaders, all of your associates are part of the community. You're known, Walter Eisenberg, you're known with your wife, Christy, as being really involved in the community. And one of the organizations you support, AmpliCause, supports a lot of children's organizations. So how do you think that you and Sage and philanthropy and the community all kind of weave together?
It is, when you talk about our DNA, giving back to the communities in which we work and live has been a part of what we've done, frankly, from the beginning. And early on, we didn't have any money. So we gave of ourselves, and we were able to give gift certificates for school auctions to our hotels and things like that. And it's really just been important to us. We encourage our associates to get involved in the community through volunteerism. We have programs. We have a program called Dollars for Dreams, and on the restaurant side called Hungry to Help, where we raise money from guests and from our associates to give back in the local community. And so we're very engaged, and it's part of what we do.
Well, I know you and I haven't known each other very long, but from your sort of everything I've heard about you over the years, that this is you use the word authentic. This is an authentic aspect of you, of your family, and of the way you do business. How much of it is part of your brand, or is it brand independent at all?
I think it's become part of our brand. And if you talk to people in our industry who are looking to potentially join our organization, it's one of the things they know about us. I will tell you, that's not why we did it. For me personally, it was something that I got as a young boy from my grandmother and from my parents. That we were blessed and fortunate that I didn't ever have to worry about whether there was a roof over my head or food on the table, and that regardless of your means, there are people less fortunate, and you have the opportunity to help them.
Yeah. But you did work hard as a kid, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I did.
What'd you do?
I actually started in the business as a dishwasher.
Yeah.
And, fell in love with the business at an early age.
How do you fall in love while you're washing dishes?
Oh, yeah. No.
Come on. That doesn't seem realistic at all.
I don't know. Well, I didn't wash dishes forever, but I was 14 years old. One of the things that I loved was the people. So I was back in the kitchen, and I'm 14, and there's a bunch of people a lot older than me. But, they had a lot of fun, and, it just, I got the bug.
Huh. Well, I worked at McDonald's when I was 14. I did not get the bug. but I will tell you, it was way more fun than I would have expected. The energy in a well-run place that's busy was really surprising. And I still reflect back. When you're running your business now as CEO of a really pretty large company, does washing dishes come back to your mind ever?
Oh yeah. I think about our associates every day, the ones that are washing dishes and making the rooms and checking people in and out and bussing tables and cooking. And, you know, that is the lifeblood of our business. I had an early mentor when I was in high school who took me under his wing, and it was in a hotel. And before I went to college, the summer before I went to college, he gave me the opportunity to be a management trainee, and I worked all departments of the hotel. The last week that before I went off to college, he came to me and said, "Okay, Walter," he said, "you're going to shadow me this last week, and I want you to be in my office tomorrow morning at 5:30 a.m. 18-year-old kid, that was.
Yeah, yeah.
So not fun.
Put my tie on, yeah. You know, went, and he said, "You know why you're here at 5:30? I said, "No, Mr. Pistelli, I don't." He said, "Well," he said, "we're in the business 24/7, 365. He said, "there's a night auditor that's going to get off work in about an hour and a half. We're going to go down and talk to him." And we did. And Mr. Pistelli knew this person, knew their family, everything about him, and engaged in this personal conversation. And after that, a little bit later, he said, "Hey, we're gonna go down to have coffee with the housekeepers about 8 o'clock in the morning." And he said, "Walter," he said, "do you know what a housekeeper has to look forward to every single day they come into work?" And I said, "No, Mr. Pistelli." And he said, 16 dirty toilets.
Oh, man.
And he said, "don't ever forget that." And those kind of lessons for me have stuck with me my whole life. And so I just respect and value those people who are giving of themselves to make sure that our guests have great experiences and great hospitality and are well cared for.
So you're the CEO, and I take that to heart, what you just said, and I believe that deeply too. As you, obviously you want those personal emotions and appreciation for whatever your team members are doing. You want that to permeate through the organization, right? So does every GM ultimately feel the same way you do?
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
But seriously, I mean, how do you know that?
I don't know that, but we're too big for me to know that every single GM and frankly, that every executive housekeeper and front office manager and restaurant manager, but I hope they do. And we really work hard to make sure that every single person that crosses the threshold of our business is treated with respect. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the core of what we're working on every single day.
If that didn't happen, would it get back to you?
Well, sometimes it does.
Yeah.
And but I hope it never has to get back to me.
Yeah.
You know, I hope other people who share that value are the leaders in our organization and making sure that that is truly what we're doing every single day in our business. Yep.
I mean, ultimately you'd know if it wasn't happening, your guests wouldn't be coming back. Your turnover would be high, all these things, right?
Yeah.
Well, you started in 1984 and a lot has changed. So my question to you is, well, you started this business, you were dishwashing before that, right? So,
Long before that.
I mean, how do you stay fresh in this business?
You know, I love to go to businesses that aren't ours, that are new, that are innovative, and so my wife, who bless her, she's stuck with me for 33 years. When we go on family vacations or we're traveling for a nice weekend together, she knows that I am going to go walk through hotels. I want to try new restaurants.
Yeah, but that's not all bad.
No, that's not bad. She likes that part. But she knows that I'm going to take time and go do that and see kind of what's happening. And that's exciting for me because there's a lot of great stuff happening.
What have you seen as you think about that? And I'm putting you on the spot. What idea or what have you seen recently is like, wow, that's cool.
You know, there's a lot of cool stuff happening. I was in Chicago about a month ago, and there was a food hall inside a very, very, very high-end department store, shopping mall. Urban, you know, Chicago is, you know, they've got shopping downtown that's, you know, stacked five stories high. Yeah. But it was very high-end, and it was very sleek, but they were using kiosks.
Huh.
So kind of this, that sounds odd, like
the,
right?
It's kind of like the Dairy Block concept, isn't it, that you've got that in that
a little bit, but this was much more formal.
Hmm.
And they had this huge living room set up where you could go hang out. Hmm. And so it's just interesting, right? It was different. Wouldn't work everywhere.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I do is I see something like that, and maybe you take a little kernel of something you see there. You know, I think there are just some great things happening in our industry. There's a hotel group that started. They only have three or four properties called One. They're one with the world, one with the planet. Huh. And they're all the materials they use are recycled. So it's a hotel chain based on sustainability.
Yep.
That's fascinating to me, right? Very, very well executed. So just seeing things like that is interesting. And I think it keeps me thinking all the time about kind of the innovation that we're trying to achieve.
Well, I think that's, I was going to wrap there, but I thought, you know, I shouldn't, because I'm curious whether your family gives you advice that helps you stay fresh. I know I learned some new terms from my sons, and I won't share them here, but what do you get from your family to keep you keeps you invigorated and fresh?
Oh, well, they keep me on my toes. They're always, you know, particularly if they go into one of our businesses, and they can be my best critics because they're going to give me something that's really, really unfiltered, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, they're not afraid. Yep.
Yes, they're not worried about what Mr. Eisenberg will say.
Exactly. Yeah. So I do get some of the best unfiltered critiques from my family, which is a good thing.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing for them. What a golden ticket they've got for a dad. So, well, I'm going to wrap up. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Walter Eisenberg, CEO of Sage Hospitality. Walter, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Dave.
It's been a great conversation. And to my audience, thanks for joining me on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you, I, and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast and submitting a review. Thanks again to show sponsors MicroStar Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, and the Colorado Chamber of Commerce. And thanks to my show engineer Mike here at Third and James Studios. That's the show. Live, work, love Colorado.